They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
A service of Fairfax Public Access and Cox Communications.
94.5 Cable FM.
Cox Cable Channel 37.
Comcast Cable Channel 24.47.
And broadcasted to the world in real audio at FCAC.org.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today is Professor McKenzie. Professor McKenzie is the author of Privatopia. He's also and teaches in two different universities and is a practicing attorney in Illinois. Evan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Shu. Pleasure to be here.
It's always fun having you. It was fun seeing you in Trenton in May. It seems like a long time ago now, but
yes.
Evan, Trenton, the Supreme Court decision in New Jersey was a big disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe what we need to do is probably start getting the homeowners and the activists engaged in trying to take care of some of the issues and the problems. What are your thoughts on that?
It's very hard to change the law through the courts. It's a lot easier to do through legislatures, since they're the real lawmaking institutions. And, you know, people turn to the courts usually when they're frustrated in their attempts to change public policy through legislatures. That's sort of what the civil rights movement did. They went to the courts because they couldn't get what they wanted from legislatures for the most part. And I think courts tend to defer to legislatures most of the time. They usually do. They'd say, well, you know, if you want to change something, go to the legislature. And so it's a logical thing to do. But and that's exactly, I think, where we are with homeowner activism right now in this society. The logical thing to do is to work through legislatures. And the truth is that a number of organizations, homeowner organizations around the country, have been fairly successful at doing this. And Cyber Citizens for Justice in Florida, and you could pick other organizations in Arizona, in Maryland, and a few other places as well, California to some extent. They're probably more successful in stopping things than they have been in putting forward an affirmative agenda, although there have been some affirmative victories. But most of it has been frustrating things that the industry was trying to do. And that's something you can point to that and say, well, that's a sign of effectiveness, and of course it is. But there's to really move forward with a positive agenda, there have to be some changes, because right now homeowner activism is simply not set up to do that. And the way I see it is, you have a couple of choices. I mean, to organize yourself. One way is to be a social movement, like say the anti-war movement. You know, you can have an anti-war social movement or a civil rights movement. And it's very loosely organized and has a lot of different groups, and they only occasionally get together. They communicate to some extent, but they don't really coordinate their actions. That's the way, if you look at it from a national perspective, that's what's going on with homeowner activism, it seems to me.
Right.
It's disjointed. There's nothing wrong with that if you have a social movement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. That's the way social movements are. But, and it's not a big one, but it's a significant one. But to actually get anywhere legislatively, you have to organize as an interest group. Now, the only interest group organizations representing owners are at the state level. Again, there's nothing wrong with this because, I mean, that's a good thing to have because obviously most of the legislation is state legislation. Most of the legislation that deals with this subject matter, with homeowner and condo associations and co-ops and so forth, is state-level legislation. So it does make perfect sense to be organized at the state level. But there's no national presence for homeowners at all. And, of course, the industry has the Community Associations Institute, which is a very effective trade association. It's an interest group. It's a trade association. And they are organized both at the national level and at the state level. So they are able to speak, despite their, of course, internal differences, like any group has. They have internal differences. But, you know, they're able to speak with a national voice on issues when they want to. The association activists really don't have any national voice.
No.
And now to do that, what you'd have to do is you would have to organize as a real interest group. And to me, it seems that most of the state-level groups are not really set up in so as to have a national presence anyway. In other words, it takes a lot of money. To have a real interest group, it takes a certain amount of money. You've got to have do a certain type of, you need to be able to do direct mail. You need to be able to put out regular publications like monthly newsletters and this sort of thing. You need to inform people on a national basis of events around the country and in Washington, because that's what CAI has been doing for a long, long time. And they send out these communications to people, and they tell everybody what's going on in all the different states, what's going on at the national level. So, you know, there's reasons to join CAI simply to be informed about what's happening all over the country. And that's what's missing for owners. They don't have it. They'd have to get organized in that way. It would take money to do that. And then the other thing it would take is someone's got to take the initiative in doing it. And then you might ask yourself, why has this not happened? I know there have been several attempts to do this. And Jean Couturier flew around the country trying to see if something like that could be started and ended up thinking this was going to be very, very difficult to do. And
it is, because what I've noticed, Evan, in the years that I've been involved in this, is that everybody sees the problems and the issues from their personal perspective. If a board member looked at them cross-eyed and upset them, then the problem with associations is that particular board member. Let's get him or her out of there and everything will be fine. Nobody's looking at the big picture. They're all looking at isolated incidents. They're all looking at what's happened to them personally, or what's happened to a friend of theirs, or what's happened to a neighbor of theirs. That's the problem.
I think that's a huge part of it, Sue. I agree completely. That's a huge part of it. I get a lot of calls, and I'm sure you do too, from people with particular problems that they want to talk about.
Right.
And what they really want is for everybody involved in this issue in the whole country to pay attention to their particular problem.
That's right.
It's not that they want to participate in solving a collective problem,
right.
But what they want to do is they want everybody in the country to donate time and energy to solving their problem with their door knocker or their noise issue or whatever it might be.
Right, and it's a minor, it's a stupid point. It's
yeah.
An absolutely ridiculous point.
Yes, you end up dealing, you know, and they want you to, I get all these requests for free legal advice. Which is, you know, people probably think I'm a really mean guy because I don't want to give free legal advice because it's very dangerous to do that. You can't give people advice on a particular problem unless you really know that problem very, very well. You have to read their documents. You have to talk to people. I mean, it takes hours and hours to give an opinion. And I get all these emails from people saying,
yeah.
here's five paragraphs, now tell me what I should do. For free. You know, I have to actually pay for malpractice insurance. It costs money, you know. And they would never insure me if I gave out free advice to people all over the country in states I'm not even licensed in without reading a doggone thing.
Yeah.
But that's what they think, that's perfectly normal to ask for that. Just give me free advice. And they call other people. Where's the free advice? Well, you know.
I get that.
It doesn't work like that. Now, and I don't want to be totally negative about this, because I do have some ideas about, you know, where you could go with this, but I agree with you. This is the problem. People are obsessed with their own problem. And as soon as that problem is solved, most of them couldn't care less anybody else's.
Do you know how many people have been added to my mailing list, and the minute they move, Evan, they get out, they find the house that's not in an association, I get an email from them, please remove me from your mailing list. I no longer live in an association. I no longer need to follow this.
Yep.
And so they're gone, you know, they're history and they're out.
Yeah, that's a huge problem.
It is.
And so, you know, if you think about the way social movements are structured, there's been a lot written about this. A social movement basically, if it's going to be successful, has to link together three different, like you can think of it as concentric circles of people. At the core, the center, is what they call sometimes core activists. In other words, the people who are really involved and committed to the issue, like you, and a number of other people around the country, who really know a lot about it. And they focus on the issues because they care about them. They've spent many, many years, or quite a few years at least, and they've learned a lot about it. They know the issues, and they have the big picture, and they're going to stay on this. It's not just about their problem. And those people are absolutely essential. But you can't run a movement or create an interest group that lasts very long with nothing but that.
Yeah.
You've got to reach out. Well, who do they reach out to? Typically, a social movement then reaches out to people we call occasional participants. These are the people who will show up for a demonstration, or they'll write letters if they're asked to. They'll do things, but they don't devote their lives to it. However, they identify with the movement over time. And these are people who don't just stay for 3 months, but they pop in and out. They retain an interest. If you take the environmental movement, there are core people dedicated to it, but there's a lot of people who can show up for a demonstration, or they over a period of years, they stay more or less interested in the issue. They think it's important to them. And then the third circle, and this is the critical one for success of a movement, is the interested public. You know, you've got potentially millions of people out there who you want to get on your side. Well, you know, the activists would love to reach out to the millions of people living in these associations and turn them into some kind of a movement for change, but they haven't done that yet. And they haven't even, in my opinion, solidified a sort of core group of occasional participants. I mean, you've got core activists, but the next circle is you've got to have people you can call on, people who have subscribed to your magazine, join your group, you know, send annual contributions like they do to Greenpeace and the Sierra Club. Sure, they don't do everything, but at least they belong. You know, you need some joiners. And it has to be people who don't just care about their own problem. It's got to be people who care about the bigger issue. And this is where I think the problem lies. Now, you've got to find a way. Talking about the core problem here. You cannot possibly build an interest group or a permanent social movement with a totally negative agenda. And a huge number of the people who are consistently involved in these issues are overwhelmingly negative about everything. They have no positive vision at all. I mean, none, absolutely none. You look at what they say on the internet. It is just venom and bile and conspiracy theories. It's negative, negative, negative. All they want to do is destroy homeowner associations or go after those horrible lawyers. You're going to crush those lawyers. We're going to get these people. What is the positive vision? I mean, I understand, like, if you take the environmental movement, that there's some things they're negative about. I mean, global warming, they say, is a terrible thing and blah. But they have a vision of, let's say, clean water, clean air, lots of animals, you know, places where you can wander around in open spaces. It's not all negative. The negative things, the criticisms, are connected to a positive vision. I don't understand, with many of these people that I read who consider themselves big-time activists in this area, what in the world is their positive vision? I can't. It's a world without homeowner associations. Is that what it is?
Evan,
that's it.
Evan, I think the problem is, you know, we talk about the bigger issue. Very few of them look at the bigger picture. Very few of them look beyond their problem. And what my question to you is going to be, how do we get the bigger issue out there? How do we educate people on what the bigger issue is?
I
had lunch with a Washington Post reporter who wanted information about associations. I thought, yes, finally, somebody who wants to look at the big picture. No, this person just wanted horror stories,
yeah.
And we figured you hear a lot of them.
Right.
I said, yeah, I do, but I want you to understand why we're having these problems.
Right.
They're not interested. They're interested in the horror stories.
I agree with you. That's absolutely what they want to write about. But the thing is, Shu, to me, the homeowner activists have to link themselves up to a bigger vision than they currently have. And then they have to tell the journalists what the real story is. You have to take the lead and you have to educate the journalists about what the story is. When they come to you for the horror stories, that's the hook, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
So you can tell them, here's some horror stories, but look, here's the bigger picture. And
yeah.
You have to educate them about what the bigger picture is.
Yeah.
And this whole problem of homeowner and condominium associations hooks into a whole bunch of larger, or not necessarily larger, but different conversations about, for example, about housing in America. This is, and it's not just about, a bunch of lawyers and other professionals bilking people and taking their hard-earned money. There is a lot going on with housing, and this, and common interest housing is a part of this bigger picture.
Oh, absolutely.
It has to do with issues of housing affordability, for example.
Absolutely.
It has a lot to do with the way municipalities are governed.
Right.
It has, and how they are financed, how municipalities are financed. It has an awful lot to do with this whole issue of sprawl and controlled versus uncontrolled development. It has a lot to do with what's happening to civil liberties in general in this country. And when on my weblog, I've increasingly begun to post the deprivations of civil liberties, not just from associations, but by municipalities. Because what I see happening here is that at the local level, there's just plain more governance. I mean, people keep talking about homeowner associations, and my friend and intellectual adversary sometimes, Bob Nelson, who's just a really a terrific guy, but he sees we're always debating these issues. He sees homeowner associations as an alternative to local government, and I keep saying no.
It's an addition to.
It's more local government.
Yeah, it is. I agree with you.
We're headed toward having a local level of government where people's liberties to just express themselves are severely limited, and everything's going to look the same. You know, everything's the same.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And where you don't have associations telling people they can't do this or that, now we have increasingly municipalities doing it.
Evan, I sent you an article from actually a blog from the Washington Post some months ago, which you put up on your blog, and it had to do with what's happening in Silver Spring, where they've gone into a private, public partnership with a developer. So now downtown Silver Spring, which is a city in Maryland for crying out loud, is owned privately by a developer who decides that you may not take pictures.
Yeah.
And the rent-a-cops come swarming around you the minute your camera comes out. You put that on your blog, and I think that it got quite a bit of ink in the Washington Post at the time, to the point where the developer decided to back down and said, oh, no, everybody's welcome to come. But this is happening. Nobody knew that Silver Spring had become privately owned.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And you can look around the country and see many examples of the same type of thing. This association, the rise of associations in local governance is closely related to this whole issue of what remains of civil liberties. Everybody talks about civil liberties and they talk about the war on terror, you know. They're really upset because the President Bush and his people are wiretapping somebody who has a conversation with some guy in Pakistan or something. Okay, I'll let the courts deal with that. You know, we have laws on that. I'm personally looking around the country and seeing here, much more immediate threats to personal liberties. We have here in Chicago and in many cities around the country, a large chunk of the urban landscape is being watched by people looking through video cameras. They're on street corners all over Chicago, video cameras.
Oh, you mean
in public spaces? Not in. I used to think, we used to write about this in political science and social science. can you imagine these private spaces, and they're going to be under surveillance? Like in science fiction movies, you know, like in THX-1138 by George Lucas and these other, people will be in bubble cities, and then they'll be looking down with their cameras. Well, you don't have to do that. You don't have to have a bubble city to have cameras on you. Now you can walk through downtown Chicago and be on cameras.
You mean you're talking about the surveillance that's being put up by the city?
Yes, absolutely, by municipalities.
Right. Oh, yeah, and at intersections, they catch you speeding, they catch you cross,
right.
You know, going running a red light or whatever, and the next thing you know is there's a ticket in your mailbox.
Exactly. They're giving tickets to people when they don't even know who's driving the car sometimes.
Yeah.
They just have a license plate or something. They're giving tickets for red lights, for running toll booths and everything else when they can't even prove who's running the car. Some of these things may be justified, I don't know, but it used to be that civil libertarians would get very concerned about the sorts of things, to me, that municipalities used to do. I know during the 60s and 70s and 80s, ACLU took many cases involving municipalities banning this or that. Now it seems like the whole focus on civil liberties is at the national level.
Yeah.
The focus of organizations is on the national government, and they're concerned about the war on terror and the war in Iraq,
right.
Implications of these things for civil liberties. Well, at the municipal level, you can see many more incursions
mm-hmm.
on freedom of expression and on privacy than anything ever George Bush or Donald Rumsfeld or any of these people ever thought of.
I agree with you. Oh, I totally agree with you.
And these activists that we have in this area, they're upset at nothing but their association.
Right.
And they do not see the connection half the time between what their association is doing and the larger issue of the deprivation of civil liberties in America. And if you refer a journalist to these people, they'll go on and on and on about their flower pot and won't say a doggone thing about the bigger issues.
You're absolutely right, Evan. I mean, it's pathetic. It really is. But you're right. That's what's happening. And people don't see the bigger issue. They don't make the connection. They don't connect the dots. You know, my neighbor looked at me cross-eyed. I've been fined for having a dusty mailbox.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's really, people have got to, and that's what really an interest group I would hope would try to do, is to try to link, if we could get created an interest group, you could do the type of research that CAI does, where they try to gather information, do survey research, present your views to people, and try to make the bigger case here to the public, and try to get people to participate, to send you, you know, $10 a year or whatever for a magazine that would allow you to fund an organization that can link the conversations we've been having to some of the bigger issues, like housing affordability. Now, there's a lot of people concerned about affordability and housing. A lot of people are concerned about it.
Yeah.
But none of them ever talk with the homeowner association activists. And here we are talking now about an institution that carries with it homeowner association, condo association assessments that undoubtedly raise the cost of housing.
Absolutely.
Undoubtedly.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely they do.
And it's why aren't we talking about this type of... Why aren't our people talking about this as an issue in housing affordability? That's the kind of, you know, people should be doing that.
Well, the other thing, and we've talked about it. We've talked about it right here on the Commons in the past.
Right.
But again, you know, there's so many people out there who are just so focused, narrowly focused on their problems.
Yeah.
That it's hard to get them to grasp it. They go, yeah, but Shu, you know what? I can't go to sleep at night because I don't want to have to pay that fine for my dusty mailbox. You just really don't understand the problem, Shu. You're laughing. I get that. I know you know. I've heard the same type of thing. You get the same thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Well, this relates to, see, this. The other thing this kind of pertains to is who, if, let's suppose that we could transcend this problem. Suppose we got some money. Suppose George Soros or somebody, I don't know, somebody says, here's $1 million, set up your organization. You've convinced me. I don't care who it is. Maybe Bill Gates or whoever. Here's $1 million.
We'll take half and half, and then we won't be beholden to any side, right?
If you could set up, and so then let's say we could set up a national organization, and we could call it the Common Interest Consumers Foundation, or whatever we call it. Now, I mean, you get a 501c3 tax-exempt status or C4 status, We get it set up. We even hire a lobbyist, and we get a mailing list. We get computer consultants to establish a mailing list. We start doing direct mail. We start bringing some money in. We set up we have a monthly newsletter. We note a good web page. We tell people about what's going on, monitor stuff all over the country, get some connections in different states, people, all different correspondents. And then we start saying, okay, now we've got to start articulating an agenda that connects what we're talking about, our issue, to the bigger issue. And we need to start forging some relationships with the seniors groups and with the affordable housing advocates and with civil rights organizations and with the American Civil Liberties Union. And you start thinking all these things. And then we start saying, now let's start making some gains. Let's try to accomplish some things legislatively. And as soon as you do that, you know what's going to happen?
What?
All the people who are spewing venom at the local level will descend on this organization, and they will call everybody in it every name in the book.
Well, we saw that last summer when the AARP came up with the proposed homeowner bill of rights.
Right, exactly. Perfect example.
And the sad part is that that was just the start. I mean, I wasn't thrilled with it, although I did work with David Kahn on some of the stuff. There were a lot of compromises in there, but it was a start. It was
exactly, and you can't make a start with the with a lot of the people we have. David Kahn did an excellent job on that, and AARP. I don't think they've taken it as far as they should have in terms of promoting it, but it's a great start for a bill of rights, basically for owners. It's a great start, and it makes some really good points. But that's not going to satisfy the people out there who type with all the capital letters, you know, and have some sort of an insult manual by their guide by their side when they're typing, so they can come
an
up
insult.
With new names to call people. You know, let's see what animal species I can call them this week. And, you know, and they have forums where they do this. You know, there's places that'll publish anything, put anything right up, any kind of vengeful screed you want to write, they'll put it up, no matter how wrong or stupid it is, they'll do it.
I know.
You know, and there's always some bozo who has nothing better to do than vilify everyone who does anything constructive. That's all they want to do. And, you know, I've got my filters on my computer set up so that no one can even send me stuff that mentions certain people, certain organizations and people. It won't even come through. It automatically gets deleted.
That sounds like a handy, nifty little thing.
Yep.
I don't get any of this stuff. I just stopped reading it a long time ago.
Yep.
I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. I don't have the inclination. It's just not worth it to me.
But that's the way I feel. And you've got to, if there's going to be any kind of activism that lasts any length of time and accomplishes anything, it's going to have to be part of the political process. It's just going to have to be, because that's where the power is. And you can either stay away from all the power and not have any, or you can get involved. And if you do get involved, then there are compromises. And everybody in the who has any political power in this whole array, and, you know, there are some people who do, they all get vilified.
We've been talking about how to get a national movement going. We've been talking about a lot of the negative stuff that we've been seeing and hearing. But it can happen, can't it, Evan? I mean, we don't have to just shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, it's never going to happen.
No, it could happen. I absolutely could. And that's why I was trying to, you know, sketch what would the ingredients be. You've got to have some resources. Somewhere along the line, you've got to get some resources to do this.
Well, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. California, you had the California folks, Marjorie Murray's organization.
Yeah.
You went. They had a seminar, or they had a conference over there.
Yep, very good. It's a really good organization and really well run, and it was a great conference.
And then you had the conference in Trenton in May.
Yep, another great one. Another great one.
I understand that there's going to be a third one coming up. So maybe things are going to start moving.
Well,
I think
it's very possible.
You know, the other thing, Evan, is that so many of us are scattered across the country. We're names. We're email addresses. We've seen, you know, we've written to each other. We've talked to each other. We've, you know, we've read each other's stuff. But we're still, in essence, strangers. I mean, we could trip over each other in the street and not know who's who. Do you think that having, you know, getting to know people in real life form, that it would make a difference? Maybe there'd be less of this negativism?
Absolutely. Because there's nothing worse for a sense of community than just communicating using the Internet. I mean, people say all kinds of things over the Internet they wouldn't say in person.
So maybe with these seminars that are being put on?
Yeah.
I mean, I know Florida's thinking of doing one. I know that Texas has talked about doing one.
Yeah. That's what organizations do. I mean, we ought to be having at least an annual meeting of all the people who are interested. You have the activists, and you can bring in the scholars like me who are interested in the issue. You can bring in the attorneys who care about the homeowner side of things and have annual conferences. Bring in the policymakers to speak. Maybe you can get an entertainer.
Maybe some of these legislators will double as entertainment.
Yeah, really. No, I think that's a great idea. A meeting in there's no substitute for face-to-face contact. I agree with you. That would be one of the most important things to do.
Maybe that's the next step. I'm beginning to see things like that happening across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been nice because I've been involved on nationally, I think, for about 10, 12 years now. And I've met a lot of people, which is nice. Of course, I've met you. And you know, there are a number of people who I've met.
And the other thing that would be, I know I agree, I think meeting face-to-face, talking, and just simply socializing is really good. I wonder what will happen if you really got everybody together. I don't think it's ever happened. In other words, if you had the most prominent activists from all the states together in one place, what would it be like? Maybe there'd be a giant explosion. It'd be like an antimatter. Matter and antimatter or something.
It'd be absolute chaos. I think that's kind of funny, actually.
Yes, it would be worth. I bet we could get the press at that one, huh?
Yeah.
But that would be a good thing to do, and maybe we ought to try to get a research grant, a grant to stage a conference and put on presentations. That's what people do, you know. But that's what organizations do. A march or a protest or something, but some way to get people together. And it's always been a few, but I've never heard of a time when everybody got together.
Well, you've had them by state. I mean, you've had, like I said, you've got California, then you had Trenton, New Jersey, and you went to Trenton, I went to Trenton, Monica went to Trenton, Pat Wigington went to Trenton. So a lot of us, you know, came to Trenton and met some of the other people there. And then, of course, there's Florida, and things may happen there in the winter. So we don't know. I mean, it's a start. It's a step forward, I think.
Yeah, I think it is, too. I agree with you. I also think at some point you need to go to the formation of an interest group. I think that the idea of a national interest group has to be one of the issues. And you're never going to get total agreement on who should run it, how it should be organized, or what issues it should focus on. But it does have to happen. When social movements start forming interest groups, there's always disagreement. Like, for example, if you take I mentioned the environmental movement or the civil rights movement. You could take anyone you want. They always end up, when you have the movement, you know, you can have many different viewpoints, but people will say, well, I'm still part of the civil rights movement. Let's say Stokely Carmichael and Martin Luther King were both viewed as important leaders in the civil rights movement. They were part of the same movement. But at some point, you start taking more of an interest group approach, and people start saying, well, wait a minute, let's try to get legislation passed, you know, the Civil Rights Act. Well, a Civil Rights Act has to focus on something. And that's when the civil rights movement split between people like Martin Luther King and others who were saying banning discrimination, federal anti-discrimination laws are a good thing. breaking down segregation is a good thing. In other words, moving toward racial integration is a good thing. And they split over that because Stokely Carmichael and other Malcolm X and others, well, Stokely Carmichael said integration is a subterfuge for the maintenance of white supremacy. He was completely against integration and didn't think civil rights laws were worth much of anything. He wanted socialism and, in essence, and black power, black capitalism, black nationalism. So they split over this.
Yeah.
Same thing goes on with the environmental movement. Sure, there have always been lots of people in the environmental movement, but some are very radical and want to burn down SUV dealerships. And other people, like Sierra Club and so forth, want preservation and conservation and that sort of thing. Well, we have the same issue here. You know, it's not as dramatic, maybe, but there are some people who are real abolitionists of this type of housing and want to have a scorched earth view of the industry and of everything else. And other people who say, well, you know, we're stuck with millions of units of this housing. The issue is what is best for the people who live in them, and what should we do going forward in terms of building more of these units? Should there be a lot more choice in the housing market so people can really choose? Do we need different kinds of disclosure laws, more regulation of attorneys? I mean, I could go on and on about this, but it's more of a reformist type agenda. Those are the people who usually form interest groups. And then all those people who want to burn the place down go their own way. That's what happens in social movements. You know, the people who won't play practical politics end up being outside the interest group, and that may be what might happen.
I think you go back to the individuals. I mean, I think a lot of these little groups got started because somebody was victimized by their association, and they felt like they'd lost total control over their lives. So they want to maintain some form of control. They started an organization. They started a group. Their president, CEO, founder, you know, whatever, and they're just not going to let go. Everybody in the world can join them, but they're not going to join anybody else.
Right, exactly.
And it's sort of a boo-boo bunny club, you know? It's everybody wants to sit around and feel sorry for themselves, and that's fine. I mean, you all, you know, you can get mad and you can go kick a wall down or whatever you want to do, but at some point you're going to have to be practical and you're going to have to move off and do something.
Yes, that's true.
So I would
that's absolutely true.
I would see, and I know that you're going to have a lot of people who are not going to budge. I mean, this is my group. I started it. By George, I'm hanging on to it. And, you know, I'm president. I'm somebody here. I'm a big fish in a little pond, and I'm not budging. So there's got to be a way of allowing these people to maintain their whatever it is they want to do and focus on whatever they want to focus on, but also be brought in under a bigger umbrella. Maybe gradually. Do you think gradually they'll come to loosen up and decide to become part of a bigger movement?
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I was thinking that very thing myself when I was driving home before we talked today. There are some personality issues here.
Yeah.
With some of the group leaders, where it's their way or the highway.
Right.
They've got a very rigid way they view this issue. They are right on this issue. No one is going to tell them anything, and they see everything from their own perspective. They've been had that perspective for a long time. They saw these issues early on, and they're heavily invested in their point of view. And I don't know. You're talking about a personality issue here, and a lot of these folks are simply not joiners. And what drew them to the issue in the first place was this sense of being conscripted into a group they didn't want to belong to. In other words, there are people who react very strongly to being told, look, you're a member of this organization and you have to follow the rules. And they say, wait a minute. You know, they're the kind of people who bristle at that, because I think I'm sometimes that way myself, and many of us are, you know. But not everybody's like that. You're kind of like, well, who are you to tell me I didn't join this group? I don't have to do what you say. And unfortunately, if you start trying to organize people like that, and that's your group, you could have a problem.
No, I understand. I realize. I think a lot of them have been victims. I think some of the more successful activists have just joined in from the sidelines, have never been victimized. I'm going to talk about Beanie Adolph in Houston. She was never in an association, but yet she and her family put together the foreclosure website.
Yeah, which is really, really a fascinating website.
It's amazing, and they've got more stuff. I don't know if they've had a chance to put it up there. And so, you know, they can focus on the bigger issue. They can
yep.
take their thing. I mean, their passion is foreclosures, and we're going to put the numbers out there, and we're going to tell you who did the foreclosing, we're going to tell you who the attorneys were, and we're going to tell you everything we can
yep.
find out about it, and we'll just put it out there. You draw your own conclusions.
That's right. Now, it's really great. Now, let me point something out, because this links to something we were talking about earlier. They've been talking about foreclosure, and I've been talking about foreclosure, and so have you, for years, right?
Right.
For years, about association foreclosures as a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for the first time that I can remember, we have a national issue of bank foreclosures, mortgage foreclosures. It is in the press all the time. It's in the international press, right?
Right.
Have you seen any linkage at all between association foreclosures as an issue and mortgage foreclosures as an issue in the press? Any linkage at all?
No.
I haven't either.
No, I haven't.
No matter how, see, we are somehow this issue, those of us who talk about this issue, I've tried to do that. When I'm talking to people, I've tried to get people to, you know, reporters to see this. This is part of a bigger picture here. The burdens that are facing homeowners these days have greatly increased, and in part because they've taken on too much risk, and in part because they've gotten conscripted into associations. They're not just paying their mortgage. They're not just paying their property taxes, which are going up and up and up. They're also paying association fees.
Right.
In some cases, getting hit with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 special assessments that they have to pay as well. For some reason, the issues are not connected. If you have an effective national interest group, presumably you could find a way, you'd have a voice to try to connect our issues with the bigger picture.
We did
the middle class losing their homes.
Well, we did something with that from out of Pennsylvania a couple of years ago. In the Poconos, up in the Poconos, there was a story, and we followed that. I don't remember the details offhand. But before I forget, Julio Rabino was on, Representative Julio Rabino from Florida, and he
uh-huh.
has this, I think it's outstanding, he has a pilot program that he started in the Miami-Dade area, where they go in and they train law enforcement officers to investigate allegations of fraud and other issues, financial issues within condominiums. It's
mm-hmm.
it's only condominiums right now. They have arrested several people for embezzling millions and millions of dollars from the association. The last time Julio was on, he was telling me about one of the cases that they were dealing with, and apparently they arrested the president. He had embezzled a ton of money, but he says the worst of it isn't that. He says that association, the president was embezzling millions. In addition to that, they had a $14 million special assessment to replace windows or something that would only cost $4 million. So the president had the power, the authority to increase manyfold the amount of money that was necessary to maintain the condominium, and then he had the power to foreclose to collect these special assessments. So he was robbing his neighbors of an additional $14 million.
Oh my goodness!
And so, you know, when CAI comes on and says, well, gee whiz, you need to have foreclosure, otherwise nobody will pay their assessments, I think it's time to start taking a really close look at what's happening out there. And Miami-Dade's the only place in the country where the law enforcement will actually go in and investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you're on your own devices. You've got to hire an attorney, go in and subpoena the records.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they should if people are misusing their authority in this way, and I have no doubt that some people are. then that's the right agenda. But there's also a larger issue. The vast majority of associations don't have the problem of having too much money lying around. And the reason they're having special assessments is not because, I mean, although I don't doubt that it happens, is not so that the president can embezzle the special assessment.
Oh, I agree.
The reason they're specially assessing is because the roof is leaking and they don't have any money to fix it.
I agree. No, I realize there's two sides of it, but what I'm saying is that there is a problem as well, and I think it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, in the bigger picture down the road, there's a huge, that fraud and criminality should definitely be addressed. But look, like in politics, there's an issue of bribery of politicians. All right, that does happen, that politicians take bribes,
flat-out
criminality, and that should be prosecuted.
I agree.
There's a bigger issue, and the bigger issue is the role of money in politics, the structural role of money in our politics, which is not usually about bribery. Most politicians who are making decisions because of money did not get bribed. It's campaign contributions, it's all money for groups that run political ads. It's the relationship between money and politics. And it's the relationship between the economy and politics. That's the bigger issue. And with associations, it's the same thing. Sure, there's criminality. But the bigger issue is the whole financing of associations and the things they are being required to do, the responsibilities they have been given, and what I think is a tremendous financial burden that has been placed on the owners to do things that used to be done by local government. And they're paying... They are also paying all these property taxes to support these municipal services, and now municipalities have increased and increased and increased the burdens they're placing on, from their perspective, these are burdens they're placing on developers. But in reality, the burdens are falling on the homeowners.
Right.
And there is a structural problem here that is much bigger than embezzlement. It is a structural problem that these associations, over time, are beginning to feel the pinch. You know, the residents have to carry the whole load. And it's an increasing load because a lot of these properties are wearing out. And they are going to continue to wear out. And they're under-reserved. And they're not going to be able to borrow money unless they hit their associations with a special assessment, because the banks won't give them a loan unless they do specially assess. And then the bank will insist on collections. You see what I mean? The banks will insist on foreclosure if people don't pay, because that's the condition of the loan.
Right.
And so this is the type of thing that's going to be happening here. And that might be one of the issues that gets public policymakers focused on this. We have a private infrastructure crisis coming, I think.
I was in a meeting with some of the local candidates and politicians and, you know, the people who are there already. Here's what I learned. I mean, it gets even worse than that. Fairfax County, from what I understand, is mandating that or is requiring the developers test a new substance for paving. And it's designed to allow runoff to get absorbed into the ground. So parking lots, streets, whatever is being used is being made up of this new impervious substance.
Uh-huh.
Now, what they said was they're not going to use it at the county level because they don't know how well it survives. And somebody made the comment, I think a lot of homeowners are going to be coughing up a tremendous amount of money to replace this stuff very soon.
Oh boy, that's expensive.
You bet it's expensive. Now, if you've got something, some asphalt or roads or whatever that allows the water to penetrate in an area where you have freezes and it gets cold, you know what happens?
Yeah.
So the whole thing is going to buckle, and they're using associations to test it.
That's terrible.
It is terrible because they don't want to raise taxes.
Well, they're already stuck. You know, associations are already have been stuck with these cheap private streets that are... They're not built to public standards, which is
why when
they try to give them away to the municipalities won't take them.
That's right.
Instead, they fall apart, and they say, you guys, you know, you paid for the house, you pick it, you know, you fix it. You pick the place, you fix it. And unfortunately, there are many of these shell games going on with municipalities where they have sloughed off burdens onto developers, which are the developers, of course, pass on to owners. And here's a great example that you just gave of something even worse.
I'm going to be looking into that when I get a minute to think straight. But that's, you know, that's another thing. All this stuff happens, Evan. Nobody has a clue about it.
No, the real issue here, to me, the bigger issue is what has happened to homeownership in this country. And the way homeowners are being used, the people
who
buy new homes are being used to finance local government.
Right, and to be used as guinea pigs.
Yeah, and they're being used to pay the bill so that the municipality and the county don't have to raise property taxes on everybody. Instead, they just raise the cost of housing and pass the burden on to the people who buy the new houses.
That's right.
And now we find out that they're buying these new houses with mortgages that have all kinds of really, really draconian terms in them. And, of course, they shouldn't have done it. I understand that. But now they're faced with foreclosure from their mortgage company. In some cases, they don't want to pay. They've got other burdens as well that make it impossible for them to pay their mortgage company, consisting of property taxes and homeowner association assessments and who knows what all. But the big picture is they've got what's happened to housing affordability. And what's happened to the choice people should have? Because the municipalities this whole question of the municipal mandates, this is something that should be right foregrounded as a thing that any activist group would want to stop.
Stephen Siegel wrote an article about that. It's up on my webpage.
Yes, it's excellent. It's an excellent article. I've read it.
And, yeah, you told me about it.
Uh-huh, right.
And it's on my webpage, and he was on, and we talked about it. So, you know, I'm trying to keep all of these bigger picture issues out there, and just so that people understand that it's not cracked flower pots and dusty mailboxes.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right. No, that's you're doing a good job of it, I think. But that's we need an I think we need an organization that does this 24/7, 365. That is constantly showing the importance of these issues and their relationship to the other debates that are going on, like foreclosure and municipal finance and property taxation and affordability of housing and many other issues, civil liberties and on, because we're like the people who are experiencing a lot of this and need to understand, I think, better what the big picture is.
But I think you're going to have people who are full-time hired staff to do that, because there's no way
that's right.
The activists are going to be able to do this part-time.
No, that's why I say you've got to start an interest group. You've got to hire staff. You've got to have, to really do this right, that's what it would take.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
And have a regular publication or publications and maybe, hopefully get research grants and parcel money out to researchers to study things and, many of the things that CAI does. I know Monica Sadler has mentioned this exact idea that there ought to be something like CAI on the owner's side.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In fact, we had talked about it some years ago, and we said, we've got to get this out there. We've got to do it, but it never took off.
Well, I know Fred Pilot tried to get the organization going, and other
national.
People have as well.
Yeah. His was more California. His wasn't national.
Mm-hmm.
His focus was California, but it's going to take a lot of work to get somebody to decide to take the bull by the horns and build an organization and get it off the ground.
To take the bull by the tail and face the situation, so to speak.
Oh, dear. And it's not a pretty picture, Evan. Evan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Shu.
You're always so much fun to have on.
Well, I always enjoy doing it.
And I know that you're very busy right now, so I do appreciate it. It's an extra big thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye,
Evan. And thanks to all of you for joining us today. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. We'll see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game.
those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home, yet the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.